The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Alyssa Mastromonaco joins to answer an important question. Is America ready for a male president? Then it's an OG Hysteria reunion when Kieran Deal, Grace Parra, and Megan Gailey stop by to talk about what the American dream means for kids trying to go to college. Is meritocracy real or a lie we tell ourselves? Then, as always, the hills will die on. Little housekeeping to get things started. First, if you have a hill that you'll die on that you want to submit to the show, just record a 30-second voice memo and send it to hysteria@crooked.com. Second item, we are definitely working on merch for you guys, and you will be the first to know when I have an update. We're working on it. We promise. Third, if you like what you're hearing, if you listen every week, please rate us and leave comments on iTunes. It helps people find the podcast. Now let's get started. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi.
How are you doing? Have you landed back where you belong? I feel like I'm singing a song right now.
You are. I'm here at my kitchen table, just like on the Twitter machine.
That's, well, kitchen table part's good. Twitter machine, kind of bad.
Yeah. What are we going to do? Today's going to be like Rant Central.
And that actually kind of, that leads me to the news that I wanted to talk about with you this week.
Oh, no.
There's a question that's been on my mind since... It's been on my mind for a little while, but the question is this. Is America ready for a male president?
Are we ready for the emotional upheaval of the talk of a potential male president?
I think that's a related question because Twitter is a place where I've been experiencing a lot of people's reaction to candidates declaring themselves. First of all, let me just start by saying, like, women and specifically women of color, young women, unmarried women have been the backbone of the Democratic Party for a very long time. And they were the engine behind the Democratic Party's 2018 wins. And they're the face of the new Democratic Party. And so when people like Bernie Sanders and Beto O'Rourke declare their candidacy, there's a certain part of the party that isn't that excited about it.
Right. And the question is like, you don't have to be excited about it, right? Like, this is what I'm having a real hard time with right now, is that this is like the crawling stage, right? If this was like, if 2020 was a baby, we'd barely be crawling right now, definitely not on solid foods. And so while everyone is sitting and reading about people and learning about people, if the white bro is not for you, just writ large, then just learn about all the other people running and make the affirmative case, right?
I find myself trying to gauge when I'm reacting to the candidate themselves and when I'm reacting to the coverage of the candidate. And those are two different,
yes.
Those are two different things. It's, am I reacting to Beto O'Rourke's policies or am I reacting to the fact that Beto O'Rourke has been afforded a little bit more seriousness by the media than women with similar amounts of experience? And I think that it's the latter. And I hate to have the latter spill into the way that I react to the former. And I think that that's something that I'm seeing happening. And it's something that I'm trying to make a conscious decision to separate myself from. But it's really hard because it feels like the media hasn't really learned its lessons.
Agree. And, you know, look, there was a lot of fervor around, like, I think Beto's probably the best example of like the polarizing or outsized coverage right now. And it's like, look, this is a man who ran against one who ran against someone who ran for president against Donald Trump, right? So more people in America knew who Ted Cruz was than they would have a couple years ago. And of course, then they know more about the man who took on Ted Cruz. Now, to me, it's like, you know, Beto's out there, there's enthusiasm, there's a lot of backlash, like, he's just speaking in platitudes and he's just about enthusiasm and people aren't giving Elizabeth Warren enough credit. Well, and not paying enough attention. Well, then cover her more. You know, I mean, like for you, I don't know about you. You are probably more intellectual than I am, but I have really gone down.
You.
You're welcome.
I've gone down
the rabbit hole trying to learn about everything that Warren is talking about. And it's fucking brilliant. Like mm-hmm. she's so smart. But the thing is if the coverage isn't going to help break down what she's talking about so that people who don't spend all day on the Twitter machine can understand what she's saying, and they're just showing clips of the man giving the speech because it's rousing, and if you're in the kitchen and you hear it on the television, you're going to look because it's interesting. Mm. So I don't know. I found the whole thing so frustrating. I'm so frustrated.
Right. It feels like when I'm paying attention to my own reaction to things, I feel like I'm watching myself tie myself up in knots because
yes,
on one hand,
wrapped around the axle.
Exactly. On one hand, I like this candidate. I like that he's inspiring. On the other hand, I don't like that he is getting an outside amount of attention. On the third hand, now I have three hands. He is the fact that he's getting attention might mean that he's our best hope. But on the fourth hand, maybe the person who would have the best outcome. And it just becomes this little tornado of trepidation. And I don't like feeling that way. And I think I don't know how to untangle it, and I don't know how to extract myself from it. I just kind of stand back and watch it happen and think, I don't like this.
I don't like it, and couldn't agree more.
Let's move on to the next news item. I don't want to spend too much time dwelling on this because the more I think about it, the more creeped out I get.
Yes.
We're going to talk about Scott Lloyd, who is Donald Trump's appointed head of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, or the ORR.
You know, I have been preaching about him for a year.
Yes, he is among the weird, creepy anti-choice zealots that Donald Trump quietly installed in places like Health and Human Services and the ORR. So Scott Lloyd was removed from his post after an ACLU lawsuit exposed that he mishandled reporting abortion requests from migrant teens. So these are not adults. These are legal children, and they are pregnant, and they have requested abortions, and Scott Lloyd has made it his mission to interfere with their right to have an abortion. So he's been removed from his post. But in 2018, 18 unaccompanied minors sued the ORR while Lloyd was still in charge after being denied abortions. Lloyd argued that they had no legal right to terminate their pregnancies, even though some of those pregnancies were because of rape. And last week, Rachel Maddow reported exclusively that Lloyd and the ORR had been tracking the pregnancies and periods of refugee women ages 12 to 17 as recently as June 2018. Holy shit.
Yeah, he's a horrible person. He's always been a horrible person. He was utterly unqualified for the job. Like, Aaron, the Trump administration went to such lengths as to pick someone to head the Office of Refugee Resettlement who finds refugees repugnant.
Yeah. And he also has written in the past that birth control should be illegal.
Birth control should be illegal. You should never have sex. If you get raped, it's your fault. And under all circumstances, you should have the baby.
So this man was in charge of resettling refugees, had no experience, and was tracking their periods, was tracking their pregnancies. The spreadsheet, which was obtained through a Freedom of Information Act request, contains really, really creepy information that could actually be used to identify the women, including their location, the gestational age, when they crossed the border. The document, this is maybe, it's not funny, but it's just one of those things that I have to laugh when I read it. The document misspelled the word menstrual, M-E-N-S-T-R-A-L, which is a perfect encapsulation to me of the Scott Lloyd school of anti-choice thought.
Well, first of all, when you think about what the office is supposed to be doing, you know, like resettling refugees, whose job is it to track the periods of these women? I mean, I need to be honest. I really, at 43, have a hard time even tracking my own period. So, like, who is the Aunt Lydia that they hired to handle this part of the operation at the ORR?
That is a great question. And I also have another question. We had a difficult time, according to the administration, we had a difficult time tracking children, living born children who had been separated from their parents. So why are we capable of tracking periods and pregnancies and not living born children? That seems like such a disconnect to me.
I would say that connection you just made could win you a Nobel Prize.
The problem with Scott Lloyd, and Alyssa, you brought this up, is that people have been pointing out a problem with him for a long time. Why do you think that it took so long for him to be A, removed, and B, for the general public to care?
The same reason that it takes everything, because in the grand scheme, right, in the grand scheme of everything this administration is doing, this is like, you know, a way below the fold story. It's been on the back burner, but in terms of like immediate crises that they create so that they can, you know, they escalate so that they can de-escalate, this one has just been like at a low simmer, but for a year. And so now, you know, I think that finally the story has gotten its due. But I mean, I think you and I have been talking about this as an underreported story for almost a year.
Right. And when you're a woman who has a pregnancy that you want to terminate, there is nothing more important to you than to be able to control what happens inside of your own skin. And I hate that stories that relate to women not having a right to what happens inside of their bodies become backburnered, because when that's you, that is the most important thing in the world. And it sucks that we're in a society where we constantly push aside the immediate and bodily needs of women.
And what we can say is bye, bitch, to Scott Lloyd.
Yes, that's a hearty bye, bitch, to Scott Lloyd. And opposite of bye, bitch, to you, because we're out of time for the news this time.
All right. Loved the hysteria gang. I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. We have to take a break, but when we come back, more hysteria. All right, we're back. I'm Erin Ryan, and we are going to Personal Political this week with a panel of OGs. Hysteria,
yes.
OGs.
Yeah.
First, Kieran Deal, actor, boom, 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 boom. Comedian,
boom,
creator.
Boom, boom, boom. Hello, guys.
How you doing?
That's a weird way to start.
The what?
That was me
the
making...
The disco siren?
Yeah, I made my own siren.
That boom, 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 boom.
All right.
How are you? How have you been, man?
I'm good. It's nice to see your face.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It's okay to see yours.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, likewise. I just was being a bitch. I don't know why I did that.
It's not like America's sweetheart. I mean,
no.
America's soulmate.
America's soulmate.
Alyssa, that's Master
true.
Monaco. Yeah.
That's true. Okay. Next, we have Grace Parra.
What's up, guys? Hello.
How you doing, Grace?
I'm so good. My hands are dry.
What?
I don't know. I'm feeling like I need lotion at this.
You gotta get a lotion in your bag.
I gotta get a lotion in my bag. I have one on my nightstand now. I've been getting these gel manicures, and I think that they are making my hands dry.
That's probably
not.
Good.
I don't think they are.
They're not? Is that wrong?
I don't think so.
If you put lotion on, just don't like rub your hands into the microphone, because that'll ASMR. This is not an ASMR podcast. This is a regular podcast. No, it can be.
This podcast can grow into be whatever it's going to be.
Or just whisper into the microphone.
Aw, Kieran.
Next up, we have comedian, actor, funny person rubbing her eye, Megan Gailey.
Hi.
How you doing, Megan?
I'm good.
Yeah? What have you been up to?
Ooh, wow. I've been on the road. I was in your home state. I was in Appleton, Wisconsin.
Ooh. It was flooding, you said.
It was flooding and snowing.
That's
at the same
wow.
time. it was beautiful there.
True story. I was on Facebook. I never use Facebook anymore except to see what people from my hometown are up to. And somebody from my hometown posted a news story from Barron, Wisconsin, which is from my neck of the woods in the state. And it was local man creates lazy river in own backyard.
Ooh, I do like that.
And he had, because it was flooding and snowing, yeah. So he had made like rivers around snowbanks, and he was floating on an inner tube around it and like holding a beer, like, yeah.
Holding a beer. That's perfect.
Yeah. We can all get behind that.
Yeah. I think we can.
And the accompanying news story was like, winter's what you make of it. That in that sort of demented end of winter mindset that you get into when you live in the Midwest and you're just like, it's March and it won't stop snowing and it's great.
And the snow is like dirty at that point.
That's horrible.
It's like sweatpants nature's worn all winter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's gross. Mm. It holds on to dirt.
And then I was like, I need a vegetable. And they were like, we have wings.
We have cheese curds.
But then you're like, I understand why you're not eating vegetables for every, like, you need,
it's how so cold.
You gotta keep that layer of fat on you. You've been hibernating.
Yeah, yeah.
And
sustenance.
So I'll take my LA vegetable wanting ass right on home.
Well, let's get into a kind of contentious and interesting and thought-provoking topic. I was thinking about this morning when I was taking a shower, Elizabeth Holmes, who everybody is obsessed with.
Oh, I'm obsessed with her.
Elizabeth, I wanted her to succeed while doing a different voice than the low man voice. Blood is how we, that's her kind of normal voice. I wanted her to have a squeaky voice. That would have been more of a challenge.
Yeah, like a Dolores Umbridge.
It's a lot harder to just carry on for so long.
I know. She rode sexism into a $9 billion company by making her voice lower. But I was thinking about Elizabeth Holmes and how everybody is obsessed with her right now. And I was thinking about that in the context of another story everybody's obsessed with, which is the college admissions scandal, which is going into its second week and is still just as delicious as it was on the first day.
Yum, yum, yum.
The leftovers really keep on
really
this
do.
Story.
They really do. It's like cornbread stuffing.
Exactly. It just keeps getting better. Or like a good curry. It's just the flavors are settling in. And
we're also clinging to it because it's like the most fun news story there's been in a while.
Yeah.
It's Covfefe, you know, so we like need to keep it going.
It's Aunt Becky. I mean, how great is that? Like an icon from our childhood just diminished.
Right. And her name is Becky, too.
Yeah.
Her character name was Becky, which is so perfect for a white lady who's trying to get unearned privilege for her white daughter.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, at the root of it and the root of what is interesting about the Elizabeth Holmes story and this college admission scandal story, which is it is a story about justice coming to people who got things that they didn't earn through cheating. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk about, you know, as we were talking about this story of the admissions scandal, a lot of people brought up the fact that there are many legal ways that rich people kind of cheat their way into college and get a leg up. And that's through living in school districts that afford their children better opportunities. That's through buying buildings. That's through hiring people to write college essays for their kids, et cetera. And it's sort of brought up the affirmative action conversation again as well. Like legacy admissions versus affirmative action and who gets a leg up and who belongs in college and who doesn't belong in college and how generally fucked up the whole process of getting kids into college is. And Karen, I know that when we were kind of group texting about this, you had a lot of thoughts on affirmative action and legacy admissions. And as somebody who went to, well, as one of, I guess everybody here went to a really good school, but
I went to a fine school. Depends on the major when you have to say that, not great. Okay.
But Karen, I would love to hear your thoughts on the general state of college admissions and privilege as it applies to people getting into higher education.
I am one woman who went to Harvard. I went to Harvard. Say it 77 more times.
It took you like 5 episodes before you let that drop, which is really
rare.
Impressive.
Rare.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't think. But I noticed that it's a lot of the men that I know who'll drop it. I think it's an identity marker for people.
Yeah.
But I'm always of the opinion that if like the biggest thing that you've done is gone to an institution that has a legacy of other people who've done dope shit, what have you done?
Yeah.
What did you do when you were 17 years old? Oh, did you cure cancer? You didn't? Yeah, get the fuck out of my life. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about it in general. It's like, that's not your accomplishment. That's a privilege and an education that you were able to weaponize. For me, Harvard was a pretty complicated experience because there are a lot of things I really didn't like about it. And then there's some stuff that was really incredible. The reason I can write now is because I got to do like a creative thesis with Jamaica Kincaid, who's like this incredible novelist. And you got to like work one-on-one with an incredible novelist for a year, which is like a skill that you can really weaponize. And understanding that like mentorship can play such a big role in your ability to like kind of galvanize even your own talent. And that's a big thing to me, is like, how do you galvanize your own ability, right? Mm-hmm. And I went in and I had just worked really hard and went to a public school, and it was like 200,000 people and like relatively meritocratic. And then I think getting to Harvard was the first time that I was like, oh shit, this is pretty rigged. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's like I was just very surprised. I knew how hard I had worked, and the naivete, I think just I was just naive in that, like, you know that like rich people exist, but this is the first time that you're like going to school with like the daughter of the head of Blackstone, and like, you know, or you're in the theater department with like, you know, a kid who's like, let's just like pretend to be puppets in a bell tower. And I'm like, I don't think this means anything. And then it turns out that his dad was like one of the lawyers on Apple. So like, he's never going to have to worry about making stuff that's like
marketable
ever. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, understanding how much that privilege affects your perspective. And that not being disclosed. And then you get there, and it was like, it felt like about a third of the place that was like, was legacy, just mm-hmm. like people who go on ski trips and do all that kind of
And that is the case, that Harvard admits a disproportionate amount of...
It's literally 33%.
A third of them. It's funny because when you describe your experience of going there, it sounds like you went from like the scene in a musical where the protagonist comes twirling onto the stage carrying suitcases like, here I am, to the scene right before the intermission where she's like, fuck this, within 10 seconds.
100%.
It's like Wicked and School Ties combined.
Yeah. So, I'm Chris O'Donnell.
Yeah.
I'm Chris. Where is my Al Pacino? I'm still looking.
I think that the meritocracy question is a really interesting one, too, because it seems as though people who attend really fancy schools or high profile schools a lot of times come in thinking, I deserve this because of who I am, versus I deserve this because I worked hard. And I think that's a really interesting divide. Grace, what was your experience with that?
Well, so I was very lucky in terms of my journey to get to Columbia, which is a school that I ended up going to. And I think a big reason is because nobody in my family really had heard of Columbia. I grew up in Houston, Texas, which is a big city. Of course, most people who go to school in Houston want to stay in Texas for college. There's a lot of like, are you going to go to UT or A&M? That's the big question. So when I found out about this cool, you know, awesome, highly academically challenging school in New York, I was like, I'd like to go there. And then I applied early and got in early, and then it was kind of done. And I think for me, it was advantageous because I wanted to get out of Texas and go to New York. I think for Columbia, it was like, oh, we have a Mexican-American girl in Texas. That's something of a rarity because there's a lot of people on the East Coast who tend to want to go to schools like Columbia. So it was win-win for both parties. I definitely remember my family explaining Columbia and to our Latin American friends and friends in Mexico. They were like, pero por qué? Ella va, Colombia, because it's like not a safe place. And it's like, no, Columbia University. And that happened more times than I would care to admit. So I benefited from my parents not understanding. Obviously, everybody knows Harvard and everybody knows Yale. And I think that in certain circles, people definitely do know Columbia. But I benefited from my parents not really knowing, and for me not really knowing what this world was like. Because like Kieran, I didn't have the experience of growing up with a lot of wealthy people who did whatever it would take to get their kids into these schools. My parents certainly valued education by all means, but they were not the parents that were like, they didn't know when the SAT happened. I never saw a tutor. I grew up with this whole like focus on being basically gearing your entire adolescence towards getting into the best school possible. They wanted me to go to college for sure, as my older brothers had done. But I the pressure that I see a lot of these kids in this college admissions scam story experiencing, the idea of having to basically from the time that you reach, you know, 12 or 13, everything that you do, every move that you make is geared towards getting you into this top school. I didn't experience that at all. So I was free to just do the best that I could do academically and be as interested in things in the world as possible. And then that bred this amazing experience. But I also know a lot of kids that I met at Columbia who felt this pressure for so many years to try to get into these schools. And then once you're there, it does kind of feel like a relief. relief. And Karen, I don't know if you felt that, but my experience at Columbia was that there were a lot of students who felt like the hardest part was getting there. And once you're there, then it's like, okay, now, you know, I don't necessarily have aspirations to go to grad school. So if I only get a 3.5 GPA, that's fine.
Well, once you are there, this is something that I found at Notre Dame, that there was sort of some grumbling among white students about diversity admissions sometimes. Mm. And like my roommates at ND, both of them were Latina. And one of them once had somebody tell her that she was taking somebody's spot.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
Did you ever experience it? I mean, that was something that I kind of sensed just among some white students who got in. They thought, you know, I did this. And then, you know, there are quotas. And this is, and right now I am not in any way expressing my personal opinions. This is just the way mm-hmm. that you hear people who don't like affirmative action talking about it. Did you ever experience people telling you that you were taking somebody's spot?
I didn't personally. I mean, I would argue that because the scandal is interesting to me because it's like it's so blatant, and it's kind of like when somebody uses a racial slur. It's so blatant. But like the bigger issue, there's like systems at play that everyone is implicated in. So like nobody at Harvard ever would say to my face, oh, you don't belong, or, you know, anything like that. But what does exist is like, those final clubs exist.
Yeah.
Where it's like I'm not in the community where somebody would even have that conversation with me. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like people
once you were at Harvard.
100%. People self-segregate enough that like you're not gonna be in that conversation with the people who are grumbling about like, you know, what the demographics of the school look like. You mm-hmm. just will not be involved in that conversation. Those are private conversations that are happening behind closed doors mm-hmm. with certain people mm-hmm. who then like might know, you know what I mean? It's like if those and we talked about this a little bit with sororities. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, how do you matriculate up and out with an education and turn that into a job or turn that into opportunities? And a lot of that is who you know.
I would say 90% of that yeah. is who you know. I mean, that's the advantage of these schools that, like, has to be stated.
And college is almost sort of like the first really tangible example of what will continue to exist for the rest of your life.
Sure.
You know, we
yeah.
now work in an industry where I look around all the time and I'm like, oh, I'm not competing with other like talented people. I'm competing with other talented people whose dad was an executive producer on Law and Order
yeah.
or like ran Warner Brothers. And so college is probably the one that's like the worst because I mean, I think college is a sham. I had this conversation with my brother recently. I was like, listen, if my kids want to like go to college specifically to study something, listen, I'm supporting it. I'm happy for you. My mom taught at a vocational high school, and every kid she taught went and had a job immediately after
right.
and wasn't a financial burden on themselves or their parents. Like, there's a lot of different avenues that you can seek. I am an affluent white girl. That's how I grew up. My parents were never going to pay $15,000 for someone to take my SATs, but I was given every single opportunity that I could. I went to a state school, and because of that, I pursued a career in creative arts because I did not have the burden of debt
yeah.
that would
yeah.
make me enter a traditional field to start carving into that debt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that Megan, you bring up a really interesting point about people having opportunities and leveraging them in positive ways versus people having opportunities and just thinking this is just how things are going to constantly exist for me. I'm always going to be able to have all these opportunities. The world owes them to me. Mm-hmm. And as you were talking, Megan, I was thinking about what Kieran said earlier about meritocracy. And I almost feel like the illusion of meritocracy exists so that people yes. who are super rich can convince themselves that they've earned it.
Yeah.
that I have all of this because I am better than other people. But that's
and now my children
case.
Will have all of this because we collectively are better than other people.
Yes,
I mean, that's, I think, an element of this whole story. It so much of this is not about the children. It's about the perception that getting your kid into a certain school will give you as a parent.
Mm-hmm. So do we believe that America is a meritocracy?
No.
No, in no,
no
way.
No, in no way at all. And I think sometimes, you know, I've been really lucky in my life in different ways than, you know, we're all lucky in different ways. The ways that I've been lucky is I grew up in a small town. We didn't have any AP classes, no real property tax base, you know, no real advantages when it came to college prep. I was lucky to be able to succeed enough to get into a good school, which I did not use at all after I graduated. I didn't use it. I've never used a Notre Dame connection for anything, except sometimes people email me and be like, oh, it's cool, you went to Notre Dame. And I'm like, thanks.
Yeah.
That's the connection that I've used in entertainment. And I never used it when I worked in finance. I feel like one of the things that I kind of wanted to get into is, you know, as a rural white person who grew up in a middle to low income community, I feel like a lot of times people like me are used as anecdotes for why affirmative action shouldn't exist, why people with different racial and ethnic backgrounds shouldn't be given consideration when being admitted to things. Because the argument goes that what happens is people like me, people from Frederick, Wisconsin, who didn't have any AP classes, get overlooked, and it's poor white kids that end up getting the short end of the stick. And I'm kind of tired of my story being used to allow, you know, suburban shitheads.
The
Megan. I'm tired of fucking
They say
Megan.
The Aarons, but they mean the Megan.
They mean the Megan. But it's a thing that it's people wear the extreme version of something they're not experiencing as reasons that they should have advantages that they didn't earn. And it really, really bothers me. Stop it.
I do think the tough thing about this is at some point, the white people doing this have to become aware that they're doing it. And I just think that's not going to happen. Like, how are we going to convince these super well-connected, wealthy people that they need to start policing themselves when they have never done that in the past? And I think it's very hard to... Yeah, like, no one was fighting me to get into Purdue. But if someone had come up and been like, oh, okay, but I am a low income, like, black girl. I think I should be going to Purdue instead of you. What parent or student's going to be like, you know what? Take my spot.
That's true. I also think that some of the attitudes that people have toward college is like, I think a lot of parents think of college as an expensive summer camp that they get to send their kid to.
Yeah.
They just get to. I went to that summer camp.
Yeah, you don't have to go to college.
Yeah.
You can go and, like, work for a year. You can
be a YouTuber like Olivia Jade was.
If you're rich, you can travel. That's what's
that was crazy.
Yeah,
that was crazy. Yeah.
We grew up in an era of, like, dare, don't do drugs, don't smoke weed. You're going to go to hell if you do. And you have to go to college. You have to go, like, from the first grade on, you have to go to college. You have to go to college. You have to go to college. And you know what? I know a lot of people that didn't need to fucking go to college. Because you know what they're doing now? Nothing.
You know who I think is the most interesting?
Gailey drops the mic, walks out of the studio. Where's she going?
Well, I don't want that to sound shitty, but it's like, you just can't assume that you need to be wasting $100,000 to then do nothing.
It's like a social club, though. People treat it like it's a fun activity to do for 4 years. And then
it's for their parents. Mm-hmm. It's for their parents. To me, the most interesting person in this college admission scandal is not Lori Loughlin, and it's not even her kids. It's not Felicity Huffman. It's this guy, Manuel Enriquez, who's Dominican, who's the only non-white billionaire who's on the list of parents who put his kids through this scam. And to me, that's really interesting because he is himself
like,
an immigrant.
Him.
That's exactly, honestly, I was
like, you did it, boo.
He's gaming the system. He's doing what all these white people have been doing. How can we blame him as much as we blame the white people in this system when he's really just doing what they've been doing?
Yeah.
They've set a precedent and he is an immigrant. It's like, well, I guess this is how it has to be done. So I'm going to do it now too.
I'm going to play the
game.
His
daughter talked actively about how her father gamed the system in order for her to get into Georgetown, I think it was. I think it's fascinating that that's now the side effect that we're seeing, that ethnic people, that minorities are like, well, I guess if I can't beat them, I'm just going to have to join them. So I'm going to have to now earn $1 billion so that I can get my kids into college this way, because that's how it's done.
I also think there was this.
That's not even that good of a college for that amount of money.
Well, I mean, Wake Forest.
What are you even talking about?
Well, see,
people are being upset because there's classism even within, you know, like you are able to say that because you went to Harvard, but then there's people being like, USC is a safety school, and it's like, yeah, but then you're shitting on the school that a lot of people really do want to. So
yeah,
I'm not saying I disagree with you, but it's layered, and you are able to talk about it because you went to the best school in the country.
I find myself asking the question, like, about meritocracy a lot, because it's like you on a personal level need to, each individual, you have to believe enough in whatever system that you're in that you don't stop trying. Do you know what I mean? Like, in a way, my biggest advantage was ignorance. I genuinely believed in a meritocracy. Mm-hmm. So I worked my ass off as fucking hard as I could. And I did my very best. Like, my mom was always like, just do your best. Just do your best. And wherever you fall, that's chill. Like, that was kind of like in my house. That's like how I
sounds
grew up.
So healthy.
It's yeah. Like, but yeah. It's also like, it puts a lot of pressure on you because you're like, then it's like, oh,
was that my best?
Is that my best? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Did I give it my best? I mean, what if I put another 2 hours into this?
Well, and you can't give your best to everything.
Yeah, exactly. And your best is a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you really think, if any individual thinks about, like, think about your fucking best. If you're running, what's your best? You're not doing your best every time you go to the gym.
No.
You're not doing your best when you're choosing your...
We're not even doing our best right now.
I haven't even done my best on this fucking podcast
I'm
today.
A solid
we haven't
75%.
Even seen our best work.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like we are disappointing ourselves. So it's actually...
But, and your mother.
And my mom is also disappointed always. Sorry, always a little mom. Disappointed. Yeah. But I'm saying that because it's like... But the result of the ignorance of not knowing about systemic, like, about this, like, kind of rigged system is that I did go to Harvard. Lily Singh, I look at somebody like that, I don't think she knew how rigged Hollywood was. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and as a result, she's the first late night host who is a woman and a minority ever. Do you know what I mean? Like, and so it's this weird catch 22 where America does have upward social mobility, where things can change. It's also incredibly rigged, but you on a personal level have to kind of believe that your work can shine through or make a difference or be a thing, mm-hmm. and also acknowledge that a system exists that is going to put you on an incredibly uneven playing field, but not like... not necessarily let that affect your everyday actions.
Well, a lot of that is your parents and your schools also giving you the freedom to understand that and learn that journey on your own, rather than dictating from a young age, this is the way it's going to be. These are the steps you have to take. And so to that extent, I completely agree with you when you say that ignorance is bliss, that you had in many ways the ignorance to be able to go down that journey yourself. I think what we're seeing with a lot of these, just the fact that you can pay $1.5 million to a college counselor that will step in when you're in eighth grade to walk you through every step of the process to get you into the best school. Imagine the anxiety that puts you through from such an early age.
A terrible way to go through
terrible
high school.
Especially if you could pay Kieran Deal $300,000. Yeah. She would give you the same
service
for 70%
less. I'll get you into Ithaca College.
Yeah. Listen, we'll fucking Skype whatever, you know?
There is this, like, to go back to this Dominican man who's my hero, that is part of the American dream, yes. quote unquote, yes. pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah.
But part of the American dream that is
have immigrants
is,
raise
is
your
fade,
children for
of
you,
course,
be an immigrant, have other immigrants
fading,
raise your children.
Is that like people always want to give their children a better life than they had. And you hear all the time that we will probably be the first generation that does not have that.
Yeah.
You know, like our parents will have nicer houses than we had. And maybe that some of that's because we've lived in a place where it's financially impossible to.
Yeah. Yeah. Baby boomers have bled this country.
But it's that slipping away of like, you know, the first time our parents went on a plane, they were 20 and we went on a plane when we were 5 or whatever. Like those tides are changing. And I do
think
the
bar was lower. Is what
yeah,
you're
I do
yeah.
think some of these rich people are. Is Olivia Jade going to make as much money as Massimo? No, baby, you're not. Okay, you're not. You're never going to.
Yeah,
but they feel that slipping away and being like, "Well, I have to set up because
right." Yeah. It's their Hail Mary pass.
You know, it's interesting how tribal we're seeing people get. Like, I don't think that we often adhere to familial tribes, but when it comes to college admissions and when it comes to your own legacy, the legacy of your own last name, we are seeing people get fucking vicious, and it's interesting. I don't think that's
throughout all societies, because I constantly think about that. It's like the tribe is really humanity. We're like all in it.
But we don't see it that way.
But we don't see it that way when it comes to like categorical opportunity. The tribe is everybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's in the tribe. Everyone's on the planet, that dying planet. We all got to fucking live with this air and this water and shit. And that's the tribe.
Yeah.
But tribalism has because I was like, that's existed in almost
since tribes.
Hence it's tribalism
in our DNA.
There's that Purdue. You get it,
What's
girl.
Up?
Yeah.
Sociology 101.
Tribalism has existed since tribe. All right.
I think, Kieran, you bring up an interesting point about like kind of idiot confidence. And I mean, and I, by that, I mean like, yeah. you know, baby sweet pea crawling through a construction site. That's like the only way to advance in yeah. American society. You have to not know all the things that are swinging at you and all the yes. ways that you could fall.
That and, first documentary, same thing. I would never have done a documentary if I knew what a nightmare it was going to be to make one.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
Your
yeah.
ignorance being a, an asset.
Yeah. You have to
it
have.
It can be an asset.
Yeah. Like, yeah. yeah. Idiot confidence. You have to just be like, well, I have no idea. Like, I'm just going to go for it.
But what's the point at which that idiot confidence is too much? Like
okay.
the snowplow parent thing of protecting your kid from sauce, like mm-hmm. in that New York Times article, yes. which I keep thinking about, is too much. That's too much ignorance. Don't sure. give your kids the
Grace
ability.
Is
to...
like, Grace is like, as a fan of a demi-glace.
I love a demi-glace.
oh, wow.
Yeah, idiot confidence turns into hubris at a certain point.
People Clearly, who are crippling. Able to continue going yeah, on from that first
crippling.
Win yes. to the second win are the people who have financial, and yeah. that's where having wealthy parents
makes a massive difference.
Makes a massive
when you
difference.
Meet someone that has like such a cool job, 9 times out of 10, they were able to take an unpaid internship
yep. Yep.
that led to another low paying job
yep.
that led to a cool job that now led them to a
very cool,
cool
job.
I exactly. mean, nepotism is surrounding
well,
us.
And then the big, the one thing I do want to say is that like, this is why I'm always saying everything's a construct mm-hmm. like money. That's why that's really why I say it. It's all made up. Mm-hmm. None of it is real. You don't need a fancy car. You don't need to indicate wealth to other people. Like you need enough to live, but like, it's like really genuinely like it's all a construct. It's mm-hmm. it's like Harvard is a construct that somebody made up. It's mm-hmm. all a construct, man.
I really want to do.
It's all a fucking construct, man. Yeah. I do a lot
the
of my.
I just can't now. Believe that you live in LA, here. The place that invented the construct.
This is, yeah. This podcast is a construct. Everything's a construct. But I want to go. I want to go back to something that I was.
That's right, Aaron. You got it.
Ooh, that was almost Elizabeth Holmesy.
That's right.
You got it. But going back to Elizabeth Holmes and going back to the kind of collective glee we're all getting from these people being exposed makes me wonder why are we so gleeful? I don't know a single person who's like, guys, hear Olivia Jade out. Nobody, even people who themselves possibly benefited from something like that. Everybody is trying to otherize these people. Why do you think that we're experiencing so much joy in watching people who have something that they didn't earn being taken from them?
Because hot, rich people are the easiest people to hate.
You think?
I think.
Yeah, I think that's a big reason.
I mean, but there are hot, rich people that everybody loves. Like, why do we hate these specific hot, rich people?
Well, because
how much they know that they are hot and rich?
I mean, I think about that in terms of, like, athletes getting in trouble a lot. Athletes now get in trouble if there's a videotape. And so, like, if there's not a videotape, people are like, I don't know. I didn't see him hit his wife. I don't know if it happened. Mm. But then when you see it, so with this, we are seeing the videotape of how these people were able to rig the system.
And I think it's an example of how we all know that you can say it so many times that a meritocracy doesn't quite exist, even though there is upward social mobility more than a lot of countries have. America has it. That's why it's considered the land of opportunity. But it's like an example like this one shows you. It's like oh, we've been told just work hard. Like the American dream is really baked into the narrative of this country. It's mm-hmm. like I can even know that it's not a meritocracy, but I like don't believe it in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it's been so baked in, this idea of like anything is possible in America. This mm-hmm. the aspirationalism of this country is one of its biggest exports all around the world in a way that's really beautiful. This is an example of like people are feeling it in their lives, right? Like people are feeling it because they're not able to save or they can't buy a house or, you know, they're struggling. They're like, God damn, I'm working so hard and I don't have all the things I want. I'm going to Costco and now I got to return, you know.
Well, they got a Costco membership. They're like, doing better than me.
Yeah. I was going to say, Kieran, as soon as it took a Costco turn, I'm like, this is based on personal experience.
I was just thinking about being in the line of returns at Costco and I was like, I mean, the shelf was $40. It's wild. I don't,
yeah.
I mean, who am I, a queen? Return the shelf.
You know why I think that we're getting so much glee from this? Because we we can't, as individuals, necessarily bring legal justice to these people, but in the public sphere, we can shit on these people on Twitter constantly, mm-hmm. and we can bring them public justice. In other words, we can collectively do something to make ourselves feel better about the situation, and that is calling them out and talking about it, making jokes about them. And so there's no legal... What I'm curious about is ultimately what the legal recourse is, but what I know has already happened is a tarnishing of their reputations, mm-hmm. and that's something that we've all contributed to. So that's part of why it feels so good. It's because it's a public shaming.
Right. And the hard living truth of like, the system is rigged.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
It's like the living proof of that.
And,
right?
And it is so hard to find like sympathy, you know? And that's where I think we do have to turn the mirror on ourselves and say like, I don't want this to get too kumbaya, but kumbaya. You know, what systems are in place?
That's not even the tone.
I was singing it like Elizabeth Holmes.
You're sad.
They didn't teach that at Harvard.
Yeah, I was going to say, no wonder you didn't get into Juilliard.
Yeah, I was going to go for singing, Aaron.
This is the part of Hysteria where we bully each other.
Yeah.
But that's
but
good.
Mostly, we but need mostly that. Kieran. But mostly bully Kieran. Yes. Okay, yes. I see. I see how it is.
So we're not going to get too kumbaya, but even though we just did.
Even though we just did. I forgot what I was going to say. What was I going to say? Oh, that like we do have to look at why it is that we are not allowing ourselves to find sympathy for these people. I understand that we all, again, we have every reason to feel that these people deserve to be mocked and deserve to be ridiculed. And I think it's fine for us to do that. But also at some point, do we have to take a look at what led them to this chain of events and what we can do to prevent that down the road, mm-hmm. for everybody? And I don't think the answer is that Manuel Enriquez, Megan Gailey's
my hero
person, path. Yeah. Which is just like, well, if billionaires are going to do it, then the answer is for us to become billionaires and do it too. But I think the only way that we find a solution ultimately, or a number of solutions, to figure out what like the core of this is to begin with and how we can remedy that.
I agree. I also think that the idea of the court of public opinion having a much lower burden of proof than the actual court is something that's very satisfying for us. It was satisfying and in seeking justice for people who were victims of sexual harassment.
Yes.
It's more satisfying when we're seeking people who have victimized us in a world that gives us the illusion of meritocracy, but then actually kind of Lucy with the footballs it away from us when it's actually our chance to experience some of that meritocracy. But at the same time, it is something that rules on a set of events that we helped set into motion
exactly.
and that we have participated in. So I think that's a good note to end on. And we have to take a break. I'm glad we solved it. Again, this is like the 10th thing we've solved.
Yep.
But when we come back, the hills that we will die on. And we're back. This is the part of the show where we take really strong stances on things that don't really matter, the hills that we'll die on. First, we have a listener hill. If you want to submit your own listener hill, it's hysteria@crooked.com. Send us a 30-second voice memo. Caroline will listen to it as she listens to all of them, and we'll pick one per episode. Let's get going on this episode.
Hi, Hysteria ladies. The hill that I will die on is that top sheets are mandatory. If you sleep without a top sheet, with just a fitted sheet and some type of blanket or duvet on top of you, you are wrong and your bed is gross. There are some people who claim, including one John Lovett, who claim that if you have a duvet with a duvet cover, that you don't need a top sheet because you are ostensibly laundering that duvet cover periodically. But if you're telling me that you're washing your duvet cover weekly or even monthly, you are a liar. You're lying. No one does that. And that's why you need a top sheet. If you sleep without a top sheet, you're an animal, potentially un-American. That's it.
I am about to go to battle this hill. I disagree vehemently.
Okay.
I only sleep with a duvet cover and a duvet. That's it. No top sheet. Top sheets are extraneous. I don't need them in my life.
You just raw dog your duvet?
Yeah, absolutely. I also mostly don't sleep with clothes. So how do you feel about that, listener?
But when you're at a hotel, do you like take the top sheet off?
No, I leave it on because other people have been there.
Kind of nice.
I'm like, it's fine, but it's not my preference.
Oh,
there's a lot of big words in this argument. She said ostensibly. You said
sheet.
raw dog.
I said raw dog.
You said raw dog. I mean, guys, we're all over the map.
No, I didn't realize that John Lovett and I feel the same about this, but I do not think you need a top sheet at all. Oh, I don't think so. Is that disgusting?
I don't
use a top sheet. My bed also might be kind of gross. So yeah.
How often do you wash that duvet cover?
How often do I wash anything?
Interesting.
Yeah, it's not a... Listen, I have a top sheet, but I'm not saying I wash it a lot. But I do have it, and I enjoy it, but I like a lot of layers on top
sure.
of me. You know, like, ooh, a 7-layer dip? Make me. That's what I want to be.
The look on Bill's face right now is just like one of like...
How do I get these women out of here? Yeah.
Sorry. Actually, you know, this is one of, I guess, three Hills Will Die On this week that have to do with beds.
Wow.
The second one that I want to mention is that we had a book event with Alyssa Mastromonaco last week.
Love her.
Tommy, Jon Favreau, and I did a live thing with her, and they all did Hills He'll Die On. And Tommy's hill that he was going to die on was that beds shouldn't have more than two pillows. And he said it, and his wife, Hannah, was sitting in the front row, and he like looked down at Hannah as he was saying it. And it was so, you could tell it was like an intra-household issue. He's
sure.
like, two pillows on the bed. And after the show, Josh came up to me and he was like, you know what? I agree with the other crooked wives. I think there should be more than two pillows.
Yes.
Crooked for pillows. Yeah, we're starting that movement.
Exactly. But Grace, I understand that you have a bed-related hill that you will die on.
Yeah. So this is a good segue, listener, because I have recently come to the conclusion that there has got to be a better way than duvets. And this is the hill that I'm going to die on this week. Because yesterday I'm over in my bedroom because I had just washed my duvet cover, which I do every 3 weeks minimum. Usually wow. more than that. And I was trying to put this duvet in the duvet cover, and it was tedious, and it was taxing, and it was hard. And my arms, which are naturally pretty atrophied anyway, were feeling it. They were feeling the burn.
You're a small person.
Small person.
That duvet is real big.
Thank you so much. And I understand that there are ways of like sushi rolling your way into the... I understand that it's all too complicated. There has to be a better solution than duvets. Now, I love a duvet for sure. It keeps me cozy. I like that 7-layer dip analogy. Mm-hmm. I like that too. But there's got to be a better way. And I don't think the comforter is the solution either. If somebody's got a solution, please bring it to my attention.
Use a top sheet, idiot.
Oh, come
That's
on.
That's my solution.
Oh, come on.
It's way easier and you don't have to wash it as much. It's like,
you still have to clean the duvet, though.
Yeah, but if you have a top sheet, that just like gives you a little bit of extra time.
I'm with Megan. I think that you're going to wash them the same amount of times.
Okay, which is minimal.
Which is...
I'm like listening to you. I'm like, wow, this is really the difference between having immigrant parents and having whole many, many potato famine generations here.
I think I'm like the lone person who washes their sheets religiously here. I do it once a week. I have to.
Yeah.
I have to.
I mean, every 2 to 3 weeks.
I should, sure, but...
Oh my God. You guys are disgusting and I'm never touching you.
Yeah.
So here's the hill I'm going to die on this week. On a lot of signs for dental offices, there is a motif, mm-hmm. and it is a tooth that has arms and legs and is happy.
Yeah.
A tooth that has a face on it. This is the most disgusting thing I can imagine.
This is great.
Teeth do not have mouths with teeth inside of them.
Right.
That makes me want to claw my face off. The idea of a tooth having a mouth on it and opening it and there's other teeth inside. It's the most horrifying thing that I've ever seen.
It's very deep throat.
Every time
put it that way, I haven't thought about the fun mirror aspect.
It's
of
horrible.
The smiling tooth.
There's this one dental office that used to be around the corner from where I lived in Brooklyn that had a massive tooth with a big fucking mouth on it, holding a toothbrush like a spear, and it horrified. I had to avert my eyes every time I saw it. There's another one along Melrose here in Los Angeles, kind of in Koreatown, and I can't look at it. It makes me so angry. Dentists, stop putting teeth with fucking faces on your signs. Teeth do not have faces, and that is the hill that I will die
on. I love it.
Week.
It's like a heart carrying a defibrillator. Like, this is not natural.
Or it's like an eye with an eye on it. It doesn't. No.
I just like a jolly, like, non-human. Like a chair that's like dancing. I love that.
What about a toothbrush with a face on it?
A toothbrush that's fine. That's fine. Toothbrush with a face is fine.
What?
Anthropomorphic objects that are not single body parts are fine. Single body parts with faces, that is where I draw
the
line.
What about like an arm or
a
hand?
I like it.
What about just a smile? That's fine, right?
No,
a mouth that's smiling?
Just a smile is fine.
Yeah.
But the tooth with the fucking face. Oh.
I get you. I think this is wonderful, Erin. I approve.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Megan.
This was inspired by one of the articles that we were reading at The Sauce Girl. if you're a grown-up, you can't be a picky eater. Like, once you hit a certain age, you can have, like, three things. You know, like, I don't want olives, mushrooms, and then, like, a floater. But it can't be, like, cheese.
What's a floater?
Maybe, like, you know, anchovies one day. But, like, if it's in a Caesar dressing, sure, I'm a fucking grown-up. I'll choke it down. But people are, like, just being like, no, I don't eat whole things, not based on any sort of health issue, just saying that they don't like meat with bones. I hate when people are like, I don't like chicken with bones. Grow the fuck up.
And you don't like the idea of eating meat, and you should stop eating meat.
Yeah, but it's just like, you can't, you cannot be a 30-year-old that's just like, no, I just do chicken fingers and tater tots.
I agree.
Drive me insane getting medium well steaks. I don't want to go to dinner with you, you trash.
But what about what about vegans?
Well, that's fine. They've made a choice that I don't agree with.
And they won't come to a restaurant with you anyway.
No, I definitely have a lot of vegan friends. I got some pregnant friends. Listen, I'm having to eat with people different than me. But just pickiness for the sake of pickiness.
Just feel like she has a long cigarette holder. Look, man, I do the work.
It just drives me insane. Your taste buds change every 7 years. So how have you not evolved
at
all?
Hold on.
I don't know. My mom told me that.
It's got to be true.
It's got to be.
And Mrs. Gailey said.
Peg's a nurse. She said it's true.
Peg.
Oh, we have our moms have the same Peg, name. Peg.
Love that.
I love that her name's Peg.
All right.
Wait, you guys both have Pegs?
We both have Pegs.
I got to marry.
Peggy's. Aww.
Yeah. Karen's like, I don't have a
I'm
Peggy.
Not going to.
Karen's not going to blow her mom's spot up anymore than she already did.
Come on, guys.
All right, Karen.
My mom's name isn't Peg or Mary.
Okay. All right, Karen, you're up.
Fuck Venmo.
Oh,
fuck Venmo. I'm done. Yesterday, three times, people were like, can I Venmo you? No, you can't fucking Venmo me. Give me cash. Write me a check. Venmo is a third-party app that is not FDIC insured. I think it is insane that you expect me to give them my credit card information or my any sort of bank account information. I don't trust them. I don't know them. I don't know who they fucking are. I don't want more information out about, you know, so that you can pay me $8. I went on a date yesterday. I went on a coffee date with this ass fuck who was like, literally said at the end of it, he was like, oh, no, you don't need to put in for this $7 Earl Grey tea. You can just Venmo me.
No.
And I nearly threw my entire purse in his face. I was like, first of all,
what?
You pay for the tea. That's the first thing. Second of all, I'm not fucking Venmoing you money,
Karen.
For a fucking Earl Grey tea.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was wild. I just can't with the Venmo. Give me cash. I don't want your fucking Venmo. I don't want to split it with you on Venmo. I don't want to talk about Venmo. If you say the word Venmo to me, I want to smack you in the mouth.
I think the real hill here is no more dates with people who aren't going to pay for a cup of tea.
And then ask you to pay with Venmo.
That's Venmo. That's just
woof.
Woof.
I would say go out for drinks like a grown up.
I know, I haven't had time.
Okay.
I haven't had time.
You're so busy.
You want to have coffee? I'm like, ew.
No. I normally, but the nights, stand up, it's hard.
It's hard, and don't invite them to shows. Men do that all the time. They're nightmare. Like, oh yeah, I have this Tinder date here. It's like, what's wrong with both of you?
Really?
Yeah.
The worst. Yeah.
You know the thing I love about coffee dates, though, back when I was dating, was that they have an expiration time, because when I have to pee, I'm like, well, the date's over. It can last about 90 minutes.
I
got to pee, well, you can wait for me or no.
I like putting a hard out on things if it's a stranger.
Don't Venmo him.
Don't
send him the money.
Don't do that.
Don't do it.
Don't send him the money.
I don't have Venmo, Megan.
Oh, right.
I can't Venmo him.
Right.
And I should have just been like, yeah, I'll Venmo you, and then never contact him again. But I put down a card. I was like, no. I'll fucking pay for it here. Fuck you. In my mind at that moment, I was like, I will never see you. Listen, I would buy an enemy a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even have to like you, and I would still fucking pick up the tab on a cup of goddamn tea.
I bet your
you
server understand? Was like, oh, God.
I bet she was like, what is this? Why are we here?
This was a great hill to end on.
Yeah.
Great hill to die, and we're all here with you.
We are
dying
so
on this
much.
Hill.
Thank you.
At first, I was like, I don't know. I use Venmo all the time, but now I'm like, in this circumstance, yes,
absolutely,
100% we'll die on this hill.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we have. Kieran, Grace, Megan, thank you for showing up. Thank you for hanging out. And also a big thanks to Alyssa Master Monaco for calling in and talking about the news. There will be more Hysteria next week. Overdone, right? 'Cause girls just wanna have fun. So Annie, get your gun. Give them